You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time live with director Steven Chbosky. Directed by Chbosky, Dear Evan Hansen tells the story of a young man who writes letters to himself in order to provide a way for dealing with his mental health issues. However, when one of his letters is mistaken for the last words of another teen who takes his own life, Evan finds himself trapped in a lie that deceives the youth's family and his friends. In this one-on-one, we speak to Chbosky about the power of mental health issues, why he believed Ben Platt was the only person for the role, and why he believes loneliness is on the rise. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Hi, Steven. I'm Steven.
Hello, Steven. I'm Steven as well.
I also feel the need to say that it's a pleasure to speak to a Steven with a PH.
Thank you. Right? So few. I know. You know, we got one of the great ones, though, Stephen King. We got a legend.
That is true. That is absolutely true. There, but most people, I mean, they give you the V, and it's like, I'm sorry.
That's not who I am. Yeah, you know. But it is cool, though, because sometimes you get called Stefan, which is kind of a great name. So I don't mind. It's like, okay, listen, between Steven and my last name, Chbosky, with that spelling, trust me, Steven has given me the least problems in the name department. So I feel your pain, but like I feel a surname pain that has been quite unique in my life.
That's fair. Thank you so much for chatting with me. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
The film's a joy.
Thank you.
I was wondering, what was it about this story that compelled you, that made you want to bring it to the big screen?
Well, when I saw it 3 years ago, I wandered in to the theater. I was in New York working on my book and doing other stuff. And I just wanted to see a show. And I didn't know anything about it. I knew the title. I knew it had won a bunch of awards, but I didn't know what it was about. And I was absolutely transfixed. I was fascinated by it. The songs were beautiful. We all know that. But the story was so remarkably different and surprising, at times even dark. It was like somehow they figured out a way to take a page turner, right, and make it emotional, you know, where it's like, what's going to happen next? I was just transfixed. So honestly, the music, the writing, and the themes, you know, whether it's You Are Not Alone or the theme of just dealing with mental health, dealing with, you know, suicide in a very respectful way. Ultimately the theme is very respectful. I know it all resonated with me. I thought it could do some good in the world. So I wanted to make the movie.
Yeah. And I confess, I had not seen the play. So for me, like you talk about it being a surprising story. It was not what I expected at all.
Yes.
So there's certainly, definitely agree with you on that as well.
And it actually, in a way, it reminded me of my last movie, Wonder, in the sense of when I started reading Wonder, I thought, oh, it's just about this little boy. And then, no, it's about his sister. No, actually, it's about the friend. And it's a story of great empathy, like Wonder was. And so I that really attracted me to it as well.
This is a time of life that you visited multiple times before, whether it's from Wonder or Perks, which I adore Perks being a wallflower, by the way.
Thank you.
I was wondering why you keep returning to that time of life and why you have such an interest in exploring the complexities of youth.
That's a multifaceted question for me, because there are some personal reasons. I still think about those times and how formative they were. I think about growing up in Pittsburgh and the way that I grew up and some of the values that I grew up with. But also, I think maybe, you know, one of my heroes growing up in Pittsburgh was, this might be surprising for me to say, maybe not, it was Fred Rogers, right? Mr. Rogers. He was a Pittsburgh artist, my biggest hero there. And fundamentally, what I thought about him was just how interesting it is just to look people in the eye and respect them from where they're living, right? And so often movies about young people are crass, or they're exploitative, or if they're made at all, you know, the parents are clueless and they don't care. And I just find it very coarse, right? Mm-hmm. And so I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to make these kind of movies and try to turn them into something that could do some good in the world? You know, I see it. I see a huge sociological component to all this that, you know, we're having a tough time, especially right now as a society and as a world. And I feel very lucky and very, very, very privileged, quite privileged to be able to use, you know, the Hollywood movie art form to put something good into the world, you know? And I think that's why I keep coming back, because I know that these movies matter, and I know that they matter because they matter to me, and because I have boxes and boxes and boxes of letters from young people, whether it's Perks or Wonder or whatever, that I know that they have an impact. So I love to make them.
We've never met, but I've worked with youth for roughly 20 years, and the themes that you're dealing with are all themes that they're grappling with in one way or another that, like you said, are often ignored by film. One specifically, I was interested, you know, of course, there's also the pandemic, but even before the pandemic, we live in a time where we're always connected. Like, they'll be in the room just talking with someone and texting someone else, you know, but loneliness is incredibly on the rise. I was wondering why you think that's the case, if there are more ways to reach out than ever before.
Well, I mean, I think that loneliness is on the rise because staring at your phone is a solitary experience. I don't care what's on the other end of the glass. Mm. You know, whatever it is you're reading, it is, you know, you don't watch television I don't know. To me, it's that. It's fundamentally, it is a solitary experience to be online. I don't care what you're doing. It is. Unless maybe FaceTime, maybe something like that. If you're actually doing something with a friend, you know, sometimes my daughter, she's 9. So she'll talk to her friends on, you know, they'll play a game and talk to each other, you know, cause one lives in another city, that kind of thing. So, cause we recently moved. So that kind of stuff is lovely. But I think that ultimately it is an isolated experience. Plus, you know, and there have been many, many documentaries and many, many articles about this. Because of the way it's designed and the algorithms and everything else, we're all being kind of like given our, you know, the same, you know, they're trying to tailor the online experience to each individual person. Like, all that data is coming back. And so what's happening is it's the computers themselves, they're designed literally to just feed back your point of view or feed back this thing to yourself over and over and over again. And so you don't hear as many different points of view. You don't get as much diversity of opinion. And so by doing this and having this be this mirror that's coming back to you based on a computer program rather than like your friend literally sitting there and you're having a conversation, ultimately it has this effect. I mean, I don't see how it couldn't be more lonely because you're just getting repeated all the time. Mm. I hope that makes sense. Maybe that's a long-winded answer, but it's something that concerns me greatly as a parent and as a person who genuinely loves people, and I see the effect all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in this particular film, the concept of mental health is a key theme throughout. What do you hope people get out of the film, whether it's parents or youth, especially in the area of mental health?
I hope that people who struggle or people who love someone who is struggling with any mental health issue, I hope they feel seen and understood and fundamentally respected. The more, you know, I've seen this, I can't tell you how many times, and I'm sure you've worked with youth, you've seen it over and over and over again. If we just talk about it, if we just shed light on it, if we just show it as something that's normal, something that just people struggle with, and we don't stigmatize it and we don't judge it and we don't sweep it under the rug, or we're not silent about it, we just talk about it, then people will find solidarity in each other's experiences to realize that even though what you're going through may be painful or you know, unique to your own experience, you're not alone in it. There's a big difference. And that sense of isolation, especially now with the polarized society we live in sometimes, or, you know, the loneliness we're having with social media, which is only exacerbating these mental health issues. And of course the pandemic, this is a very, very challenging time for kids and parents. And what I hope that they get from the movie is a sense of hope and a sense of being understood and seen, because ultimately, you know, the audience doesn't exist for the film. The film exists for the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a very important philosophy that I have. Like, it doesn't, it's a movie, you know, but people are going to live their lives. And if the movie can give them something and a sense of hope or a sense of inspiration, or even that thing to choose life, or the idea to choose, you know, I'm going to talk to my dad. I'm not going to pretend this isn't going on anymore. Well, there's nothing more gratifying to me than that.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yes, you're right. The film exists for the audience.
Yes.
Which is such an interesting take, because we make these things and we spend so much time talking about the people who have created it, but not enough time about the people who have consumed it.
Yes.
We move on.
I couldn't agree more.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about Ben, because I mean, Ben has a beautiful voice. He's wonderful. I know there's been a lot of talk about him in the role. Why was it so important for you to use him as Evan? I know he did it on stage, but why was it important for you to use him in the film?
Well, I think I saw it on stage. I didn't see him do it actually on stage.
Oh, wow.
I saw his Tony performance on television. He was wonderful. It's that soundtrack and just knowing him as a person, you know, he's such a nice young man. And for all the success he's had, he's a very grounded person and he's a very kind person. And so to me, it was, I don't know, to me, when you do it from the very first workshop and you're still young enough to play the part, I wanted to build the movie around him. To me, there was no other choice. This was not something that was mandated for me. It's just like, I love this young man. I think he's brilliant. He's a great singer. He's a wonderful actor. And I have to say, from a musical theater perspective, and I'm a huge musical theater fan, movie musicals, his ability, and I'd heard about it, his ability to like get genuinely emotional, sing with an open throat, then have a breakdown and cry and then sing with this lovely vibrato. It's physiological. It's near an impossibility what he does. There are only a handful of people that it could ever do this. And it's so magical. I had to cast him. There was nobody else.
Yeah. He has a really beautiful way of bringing those songs to life.
Yes.
And okay. This is a little bit of a strange question in some ways, but I was just curious. I was wondering how you view Evan within the film as himself, because I mean, here you have this young man who his role, I mean, he gets brought into these circumstances so innocently, mm-hmm. yet it continues on and continues to build. I was wondering if you feel like his act of deception is also an act of grace, or whether or not this is one of those things he should have killed from the beginning.
I think it's a great question, actually, and I've never been asked it, and thank you. Mm-hmm. My view of Evan is it's what you asked is kind of both, mm-hmm. that he is brought in when the family, you know, says, you know, Connor wanted you to have this and presents a letter. He's like, no, Connor didn't write this. He tells them the truth immediately.
Yeah.
But they cannot hear it. You know, there is so grief stricken that they can't hear it. They can't accept it. You know, and I often wondered, you know, when adapting something like this or looking at a story like this, I extrapolate, like, okay, if he just said, you know, no, I'm sorry, I wrote this letter, I don't know anything about it. What happens to Cynthia Murphy the next day? I don't know. She is so despondent. So there is, I think, equal measures of kindness, because there's no malice in what he's doing. There's no malicious intent to any of it. And then he gets corrupted by it. And there is some darkness there. And to me, what that represents is the struggle that all people have. Like, how much of myself am I going to really, reveal, and to try to be our better selves? You know, I have a lot of compassion for Evan, and I have a lot of compassion for, I don't know how you can look at a child whose mother works all the time, who has no friends, whose father won't even return his texts, who sits as a latchkey kid in that house alone all the time with nothing but his phone to keep him company. And here's this family that is nice to him and loves him and cares about him. and he loves them back. It's very complicated, and that's what I love about it. It's not an easy answer either way. So your question is very, very much appreciated.
Well, I appreciate it, and appreciate your answer and your openness. And Stephen, honestly, I think it's a beautiful film.
Thank you.
With some wonderful music, a great soundtrack, and I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks.